Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Today we begin a series of interviews with leading American governors, and our guest is the governor of New York, Mr. Nelson A. Rockefeller. Others will follow at intervals during the year. Governor Rockefeller's victory of last November was one of the highlights of an election in which Republicans generally did not fare so well. He has been in the national spotlight ever since. Mr. Rockefeller entered the governorship after a long and varied experience under three presidents. Among his assignments over the last 20 years, coordinator of Inter-American Affairs, Assistant Secretary of State, and Undersecretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. His first legislative session dealt with many issues, including crime, transportation, housing, and finance. The most controversial was the bill enacted to raise the income tax. Governor Rockefeller's name has been mentioned with increasing frequency in connection with the presidential race of 1960. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Governor Rockefeller, are Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Clifton Daniel of the New York Times, James Desmond of the New York Daily News, and Lawrence E. Spivak, a regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Governor Rockefeller, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Let's start with an easy one, Governor. Do you expect a deficit, a surplus, or a balanced budget for New York this year?
A deficit.
Your controller, Mr. Leavitt, says you're going to have a surplus of $130 million. Where does he get his surplus, and where do you get your deficit?
Well, I wish, frankly, Larry, that I felt he was right. It would be a wonderful thing for the state. But my estimate is that we'll be between $100 and $150 million behind, as was originally estimated, and we'll have to borrow $100 and perhaps use another $50 from the Capital Reserve Fund.
Governor, if Mr. Leavitt proves right and you prove wrong and there is a surplus of $130 million, can the people of New York State expect a cut in their income taxes?
Well, if I were faced with the circumstance which you say he predicts, then I would have to consider the question which you raise. And it would be a great pleasure if I could do so.
There are many political experts believe that your increase in the income tax in New York was something of a political blunder and hurt you politically. Do you think it has hurt you any?
Well, I know it's hurt the people of the state because they got to pay the taxes, and I feel very badly about it, and of all the things to have to do when you first come into office to raise taxes, it's a very sad question, and I feel that it is a serious matter. However, the sound fiscal policies of this state getting back onto a sound basis seemed to me was of major importance to the future of our state, both in terms of its economic growth, in terms of our ability to meet the needs of the people, and therefore, faced with a deficit of $425 million, I had no alternative but to ask the legislature to impose additional taxes.
Yes, but Governor, as you've gotten around the state and met people and heard their complaints, do you think that it has hurt you politically?
Well, I don't think it's helped me any. But I don't think that's the point, Larry. I think the point is people elected me and pay me to do a job for the state. And I think this was part of that job, and therefore I did it.
Mr. Desmond.
Well, Governor, your tax program was based on pay-as-you-go.
Check.
What is so sacred about pay-as-you-go? Why should we pay for grammar schools for to be used 50 years from now?
Because, in my opinion, if we don't pay for them, our children or our children's children are going to have to pay for them. For every dollar that we spend now, if it's paid back over a period of 50 years, it's going to cost them $1.50 when they pay it back. And I figure our children are going to have things that they want to do and that we don't want to saddle them with a debt, and that it's up to us to pay at the minimum cost, with maximum economy, for the things that we need now to meet our responsibilities as of today.
Well, Governor, we're back on taxes. Your new Speaker of the Assembly recently said that he expected tax relief in the 1960 session. Doesn't he know what your program is?
Well, I was very interested to read that in the papers, and it was very good news to hear, but it's not news. It's based on any figures that I'm aware of.
Mr. Daniel.
Governor, a question on a national issue. I believe you've been invited to testify in Washington at Senate hearings on the president's veto of the housing bill. Is that correct?
Well, I've read so in the paper, but I haven't seen as yet an invitation.
If you are formally invited, do you plan to accept?
Well, I don't think so, to tell you the truth, because what I'm trying to do is to deal with the housing problems we've got here in the state, particularly the middle-income housing problems, on a state basis. And I don't feel that I can add anything to a discussion in which we have representatives from New York, both in the House and the Senate, and the administration itself, who are discussing these questions. I am for a housing program. The magnitude of that program, I feel these gentlemen down there are in best position to tell as to what they can do in terms of the other financial obligations which the federal government has.
Well, insofar as this program applies to the state of New York, do you think it's extravagant or inflationary, or would it meet the needs of the state of New York?
Which program?
That is the program in the Democratic bill that the president vetoed.
Well, it would be a wonderful thing for New York to have more federal funds for low-cost housing. We can use them. Whether the federal government can justify going from the $800 million, if my figures are correct, that was recommended by the federal administration, to the $2.2 billion recommended by the majority in the legislature or in the Congress, I really am not in a position to say, because I think it relates importantly to other fiscal responsibilities and this very serious question of inflation which faces the country. And I think the administration has got to figure out and balance these questions out as to how much money the federal government can spend and where that money should be placed.
I think, just for the record, Governor, there is a dispute over whether the amount to be spent would be $1.3 billion approximately, or $2 billion, as the president said. Again, on the question of housing, I think before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, you advocated legislation to eliminate discrimination in privately built multiple housing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you feel that this is a national need? Should we have legislation of that sort on a national scale?
Well, as you know, New York City's had legislation now for a year or a little more. The experience with that has been very good. On the basis of that, I feel now that that general concept can be extended to the state. After we'd had some experience here in the state, I think that it becomes then, if it's successful as it has been in the city, a natural subject for national consideration.
Mr. Childs.
Governor Rockefeller, you spoke about the dangers of inflation.
Mm.
The Rockefeller Report on the U.S. economy, you were chairman of that group that made that report, says this: the power to force inflation upon the nation as a whole cannot be left in the hands of private groups. If such power exists or comes into being, it will have to be restrained, preferably by the self-restraint of business and labor leadership.
Mm.
But isn't this steel strike now going on proof that self-restraint just will not work, Governor?
Well, I suppose the question, Mr. Childs, as to when the period comes in where that restraint is evidenced, or the fact that there's a lack of restraint is evidenced in the hands of private groups, both management and labor, and the government has to step in. The president has said that he did not feel at this time there was anything further that he could profitably or usefully do in this situation.
Well, now, your state, I believe, is the third largest steel producer, isn't it?
That's correct.
This strike may cause you very serious difficulties here.
Would you be
in favor of invoking, having the Taft-Hartley 80-day cooling-off period invoked at this time?
Well, I'm in favor of this strike being settled and settled on a base which is going to give us labor peace in this basic industry, both for our state and the nation. As to whether that should be done and will be done in the next, in the reasonable near future, with this left in the hands of business and labor alone, or whether the federal government should intervene with another effort at a settlement, frankly, I don't know what the best timing is. But I think it's extremely important to have these labor management problems settled to the greatest degree possible by labor management relations and negotiations, and a minimum of government intervention.
Well, you can't do this here in the state, of course, can you, Governor? You have to have the action of the federal government to help settle this.
You mean in a national steel strike?
Yes.
That is correct.
What do you think that statement about private groups? It cannot be left in the hands of private groups. Does this imply perhaps the necessity for federal price controls and wage controls?
Well, I think it's more federal action, whatever that action might be at the time that and under the circumstances which existed, I think would have to be determined. I don't think you can determine in advance a situation prior to the actual circumstances and their development.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, are you embarrassed or displeased by the continuing discussion about you as a presidential candidate for the Republican Party?
Well, displeased only in the sense that it's a subject that comes up and on which I have given a very simple and frank answer to the effect that I'm not a candidate, but that doesn't seem to end the discussion. I'm not embarrassed by the circumstances, though.
Governor, before you decided to run for the governorship, according to the New York Post, you said an answer to a question about running this, and I'd like to quote it. If there is an opportunity for me to render really useful service by running, then my decision will be to do it. Will that be the determining factor for you on the question of 1960?
Well, should the circumstances develop as they have not to date developed, in my opinion, then maybe what you say in giving that quote might apply.
Governor,
Governor,
do you plan to withdraw your name from the New Hampshire primaries next March?
It hasn't been put in.
Well, there's been a group that has announced very definitely that it's going in. And since you have the only power to remove it.
Well, frankly, Jim, what I'd do is to appraise the situation should such a situation develop at the time it develops and act accordingly.
Mr. Daniel.
There's been a story, Governor, that there was a movement started in this state to put your name forward among your friends and supporters of the Republican Party, and that it was squelched by the state chairman. Is this correct?
Put my name forward where?
Oh, no, not to put your name forward, but to organize and begin organizing on behalf of you as a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination.
Well, Mr. Dan, we all know that that the presidential race is one of the great national pastimes in this country, and that it consumes a great deal of time and interest naturally on the part of the people, and that speculations are carried on way in advance. Now, there are a great many people who have written and who have proposed or offered, which I appreciate very much, their services in promoting my name for the candidate as president. I have told them all that I'm not a candidate, that I'm going to concentrate my efforts on my job here in New York State, and that I want to do the best possible job I can as governor. And I haven't lifted a finger beyond that.
You say this is a national pastime, speculating on the presidency. Would you care to speculate who is the leading Republican candidate now, or is there more than one?
I should say that Vice President Nixon was the leading Republican candidate.
Is there another?
I wouldn't know.
Have you heard anyone
mention? I haven't heard of any declared candidates.
Have you heard anyone mentioned prominently except yourself? Let's put it that way.
Oh, yes. I've seen polls in which other candidates' names have been entered and have received support.
Mr. Childs.
Governor, it's often been said in the past that no man of great wealth could be elected to the presidency. On the basis of your experience in seeking elective office so far, do you think wealth has been a handicap or no?
Well, I don't think it has. I think the American people have developed, and I think television is one of the factors in helping to develop it, a keen sense of perception as to whom they want to represent them in public office, and that I don't think the factor of wealth is a factor in their judgment.
Other people have said that the fact that you have great resources, it made it possible for you to hire all kinds of experts. Has it been a great help to you in seeking office and in holding office?
Well, has it been a help to me in hiring experts or in seeking office?
Well, hiring experts to help you seek office.
Yes, I should say that in studying the issues which are of major significance to the future of New York State, as I did during the campaign and prior to the campaign, that it was a tremendous help to me in finding the basic factors which affect, for instance, job opportunities, economic growth, social evolution in our state.
And in laying down the national issues in the reports that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund put out was a help, too, was it not?
Well, that I wouldn't be able to judge.
Mr. Daniel.
Governor, the question of issues has been mentioned. Do you have in your mind what you consider the most important single issue on the national scene today?
I think that the American people feel at peace is the most important single issue.
I would call that an international question. I want that answer as well, but I'd like to have the answer also on the national scene. You mentioned inflation earlier. Do you think that's the great issue of our national life?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that is certainly an integral part of a total issue. I think the total, the economic growth of our country, the sound, solid economic growth and the adequacy of job opportunities for the young people, for the existing working force in our nation, and the problem of competition in the world scene, which is an increasing problem which we face in this country, are of major importance. To me, are the root, really. And inflation is an integral part of job opportunities.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, how do you explain the fact that President Eisenhower's popularity continues to be high, but that the Republican Party's popularity seems still to be sinking?
Well, I think President Eisenhower is a man in whom the American people have a tremendous amount of confidence and for whom they have great respect, that he is a proven leader in times of war and peace. I think that he is judged on national and international issues. I think that if you speak of the party, you immediately get down into local issues where people's judgment are determined by the party's position on local questions in various parts of the country.
Well, don't you think that fundamental Republican policies are involved, too?
Well, I didn't find, frankly, in the campaign, any lack of enthusiasm for policies that were related to the Republican Party platform in New York State. Now, I can only speak for New York because that's the only place I've been active in politics.
Well, do you think that the victory in New York was based upon Republican policies or upon your own personal, let us say, charm?
I'd like to think it was on the advocacy of sound policies and programs.
Well, what do you think, though?
I do think that.
Mr. Desmond.
Governor, considering that the Republicans lost 3 congressmen, several assemblymen, and a couple of state senators, it doesn't seem that people were voting for Republican policies, does it?
Well, they expected to lose a lot more than that, Jim.
Well, if we may get back to your national situation.
So that they did a lot better than expected.
May I ask one further question?
Yeah.
All your disclaimers, if that's what they are, of ambitions, apply to second place, too?
They certainly do.
Mr. Childs.
As a leader of the Republican Party, Governor Rockefeller, how would you appraise the job that has been done by the administration so far on these following points? National defense. Now, in the Rockefeller report, you were very critical of the failure to spend sufficient money both for security and for civil defense.
Well, Also, the reorganization of the Defense Department, as you remember, was a major item. In the reorganization, major steps were taken last year by the Congress on the reorganization of the Defense Department, very much in line with the position taken in the report. On the increased expenditures relating to missile programs, again, the amounts were very closely comparable to those recommended. On civil defense, there has not been any major national change in policy since the report.
But the Rockefeller report advocated an additional $3 billion a year over a period of several years. Now, that has not happened, has it, Governor?
It did happen the first year. This year, of course, the session is not over, and I don't know what the final outcome will be. But the first year, they followed very closely the same lines which we felt were essential to ensure the best possible protection from a military point of view of this nation.
Well, second, Governor, on education. Rockefeller report was critical of the handling of educational problems and saw no alternative to federal aid for school construction. How do you feel about the progress made thus far by this administration?
Well, I participated as undersecretary with the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare in the development of a bill for federal aid to school construction. This is 4 years ago when I was in Washington. That bill was not well received in the Congress and did not pass. It was based on federal aid to those school districts which had proven financial need, which was the basic concept of the president, which I think is an extremely sound one. A formula as yet has not been reached by the Congress, which they and the administration could agree on. Now, this is a difficult subject. It strikes at the very roots of our concept of local control of education in this nation. We're trying to meet the problem here in the state on our own. But I do recognize the tremendous importance of assistance in this field to ensure that every American child has a chance to get the best education.
Well, the Eisenhower administration is now opposed to school construction on any formula that would mean anything.
Well, of course, I presume that's a question of interpretation as to whether it's a formula that means anything.
And one more point, Governor.
I think they have proposed legislation, but it has not met with the approval of the majority in the Congress.
One more point. Do you feel that the rate of economic growth under the Eisenhower administration during the past 2 years is in accord with the Rockefeller report, which...
Well, of course, there was a period of recession at the time the reports came out. The report recommended an increase from a 4% growth rate to a 5% growth rate. I think at the present time, in the upswing from that recession, which is now taking place, that they've passed the 5% growth rate
well,
and are growing
great
faster.
There's a deal of dispute about that. Some people believe it's hardly more than 3% today.
And others feel it's close to 6. So time will prove, though, because it won't be long before we'll know. But I think the growth rate has accelerated very importantly, and we're doing everything possible in New York State to increase the growth rate here because that's closely tied to job opportunities.
Mr. Daniel.
Governor, a further question on civil defense. I think you're contemplating for New York legislation to require every household to have a shelter to protect them against nuclear fallout. Is that correct?
Well, that is correct, Mr. Daniels. I'm very concerned. In fact, it's the thing that concerns me most is my responsibility for the security and safety of the people of this state. Now, under the National Plan of Civil Defense, the individual in the nation is responsible for survival during the first 2 weeks after attack on his own. And after that, the states are supposed to help pick up for another 4 or 5 up to the 5th week, and then the federal government comes in. Now, frankly, the individual in this country and in our state is not today prepared to assume that responsibility.
What is the nature of the responsibility? How much is involved for the individual?
Well, the figures in the recent tests on simulated attack showed that some 1,300,000 people in New York would be killed by direct blast, that 3,600,000 we'd be killed by fallout, and another 4 million would be permanently disabled by fallout. Now, this is an impossible situation for the security of the people of this state, and therefore this study proved that it was possible with fallout protection for this country to survive an all-out thermonuclear attack. And therefore, I'm for fallout protection.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, at one time, I believe you were for a national shelter program. What made you shift to a state program?
Well, my responsibilities are as governor of New York State, and the new program for civil defense, which was enacted by the Congress and promulgated by the president, calls for the shared responsibility between the state and the federal government, plus this responsibility of the individual to protect himself for this first 2 weeks. And what I'm saying is that the individual is not now equipped to do that, and we in this state want to make possible the steps which will prepare the individual to have that capacity to survive. And I think it's essential that he does, and I think it can be a major factor in contributing to the peace of the world.
Governor, do you really think you're going to be able, by law, to compel people to build their own shelters?
Well, first, I think we've got to know more between now and the convening of the legislature. We've got to know more about the details of cost and the methods and so forth of doing it in the home, in the schools, in factories, in various places of public assembly. Then we can tell better just exactly what kind of legislation is needed. But I feel that it's of essential importance to the future security of our country that we are able to protect ourselves as individuals.
As of now, you're planning a law to compel people, though.
Well, this was the recommendation of the report, and the report was approved by the Defense Council, which recommended that the governor take these recommendations, study them in detail, and come up with specific proposals for legislation.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry, but I must interrupt. Thank you very much, Governor Rockefeller, for being with us.
Monitor's thanks to Governor Nelson A. Rockefeller of New York and the members of the Meet the Press panel. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. And now this personal word, if we may. Summertime should be a time for fun, and will be for most of us, but for many it may be a time for suffering and disability, perhaps for death, just because they didn't bother to get their polio shots. Don't be fooled by a drop in polio cases since the new vaccine was put into use. That drop certainly shows the value of the vaccine, but won't help you if you are not vaccinated.